Returning to the studio once again, our friend Sean Yarby. Good to see you, Sean.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
I got a chance to, I caught you in the on the news last night, as a matter of fact. Looked like you were in front of the Health and Human Services Committee.
Yeah, I was trying to share my wisdom with them.
Were they receptive at all?
They asked good questions, which is always nice, and gave me the opportunity to really talk about the issue beyond just the sound bites that people use.
Yeah, and there are plenty of them, and boy, they are well-worn, aren't they?
Another assault on general assistance and the, yeah, all of that. So it was like deja vu for me.
Yeah, I can understand. There's been a significant amount of talk, and understandably so, around the problems of addiction here in our state. But it seems like all of that conversation has been directly related to the problem of opioid addictions, and not much conversation at all about the role other drugs play in the trouble of addiction here in our state. And I appreciate you bringing some additional voices to this conversation. Also joining us here in the studio this morning, Denise O'Connell is the Senior Program Manager for Lunder Dineen Health Education Alliance of Maine. Good morning, Denise. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you taking the time to be here. Also joining us this morning, Dr. Mark Publicker is on the telephone. He's past president of the Northern New England Society of Addiction Medicine. Dr. Publicker, thank you for your time, sir.
Well, thank you. I'm really delighted to talk about this topic.
When you consider the idea of people's understanding of alcohol and its relation to the troubles of addiction here in our state, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect for a lot of people. Is that a fair assessment, Dr. Publicker?
Yes, I think that alcohol and alcohol treatment has honestly been orphaned by the opiate epidemic. Reasonably, we need to focus on opiates, but there's extremely little treatment available for people with alcoholism. I think it's important to note that death rates for alcohol-related problems are actually three times at least as great as that for opiates. So we're talking about a very deadly disease that's not being treated properly.
That's almost unbelievable to most of our audience, I'm going to believe, because of all of the information that's been out there over the last several months to a year with regard to the idea of deadly overdoses from opioid use. Alcohol, a more deadly addiction.
Well, you know, alcohol doesn't typically cause immediate death like an overdose. It's responsible for cancers of the mouth, larynx, lungs, stomach, causes heart disease, causes pulmonary disease. So it's important to recognize liver disease, of course, that in terms of its toxicity, alcohol is much greater. And then, of course, we have to include deaths by drunk driving. We have to include the thought about domestic violence. We have to think in terms of drunk driving, of course, is a significant one. So there are multiple ways in which alcohol causes increased illness and death.
It sounds like we need a concerted effort to re-educate Mainers to the dangers of, unhealthy alcohol use?
Well, I think that we need both. We need to educate the public, but I think most importantly, we need to be able to help health professionals understand the disease. And there's a reluctance often on the part of medical professionals to discuss the problem of alcohol when they suspect it in their patients. That's largely based, actually, on a lack of education. There's very little to no education regarding addictive disorders, including alcoholism, in any phase of the medical education. There's virtually no teaching in medical school, rarely any in residency, and certainly after people go into practice, there's virtually no access to education about identification of the disease, and actually, more importantly, how do we talk with people? If you don't know, if you haven't been given some skill, some knowledge, and ability to really work through your own attitudes towards alcohol, we can't be effective.
Denise, in listening to Dr. Publicker, it all seems to make perfect sense, yet it gets very little airplay. Why the disconnect here?
Thanks so much. Exactly. You know, most of us consume alcohol. Most of us think we know a lot about it, but when Dr. Publicker just shared those facts, you were surprised.
Yeah, completely caught unaware.
April is Alcohol Awareness Month, so we think it's an opportunity for everyone, health professionals and the rest of us, to really get informed and make informed choices. One of the things that I wanted to share is we think about things like diabetes as chronic illnesses, and when someone develops a substance use disorder, it really now is viewed by all of us and the evidence as a brain disease and should be looked at the same way. So we're really trying to shift attitudes and awareness. Lunder Deneen, Health Education Alliance of Maine, is trying to make an impact by doing exactly what Dr. Publicker mentioned, which is to try to educate health professionals, not to make them addiction experts, but to make them comfortable and confident in talking with us. And then we also want the patients to feel comfortable talking about it and connecting the dots, if you will, about how even unhealthy use before it's an addiction can negatively impact our health.
The some of the information that's coming forward as part of this time to ask effort is really stark when you look at it in comparison to some of the conversation that's been going on around opioids, for example. The numbers are staggering when you start looking at the costs associated with the excessive use of alcohol. We're talking about a very princely sum.
It's very significant. We conducted a needs assessment of the primary care practices where we're piloting this education program. And what we learned from the University of Southern Maine Muskie School of Public Service is that unhealthy alcohol use costs Maine $938 million when you include also incarceration in treatment. It's the number one substance of use and misuse in Maine. Unfortunately, we don't talk about it. In terms of why we chose alcohol, obviously the data speaks for itself. We also knew that in Maine there was a lot being done collaboratively statewide to address the opioid epidemic. So this was an unmet need that we identified. And we also know the evidence shows that a primary care professional simply having a conversation with you about alcohol actually gets us to reconsider our consumption and change. So it's one of the most effective screening tools that exists. So we just want to make it easier for health professionals to begin to use some of those tools.
Dr. Publicker, with the passage of a referendum question last fall that makes for legalization of marijuana use in the state, a lot of the conversation during that campaign effort was related to the idea of marijuana or cannabis, as proponents prefer it to be referred to, as a gateway drug. But it would certainly seem that if there is, in fact, such a phenomenon, it has to begin with alcohol, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, and let me emphasize the argument that marijuana is safer than alcohol is based on a faulty premise that if people smoke marijuana, they won't drink alcohol. Of course, people do both and do both simultaneously, which magnifies the physical harm, the capacity to drive a car, be able to function. So whenever you hear people say that marijuana is safer than alcohol, we must consider that it isn't as if people would only smoke marijuana. People do both. Is marijuana a gateway drug? Well, I have an addiction medicine practice. I began practicing in 1983. Virtually everyone who I see began with smoking marijuana. So I think legitimately, we can regard marijuana use as a gateway drug. Frankly, smoking cigarettes is also a gateway drug.
Mm-hmm.
But marijuana has relative safety, but it doesn't preclude the use of other toxic substances. It may contribute to the origin of the use of other substances.
That's the voice of Dr. Mark Publicker joining us on the phone. How do we go about utilizing something like an awareness month, April as Alcohol Awareness Month, to further the education of certainly of the general public? But it sounds like we need to make further inroads with regard to creating an understanding and appreciation of alcohol as addictive drug, as an expensive notion with regard to a drain on society as a whole. How do we go about utilizing this opportunity to its greatest degree?
I think one of the things is doing what we're doing this morning, and that's just talking about it in a normal way, and you know, maybe outside of the normal debates that happen in the public policy arena, and really just have honest conversations that sometimes are really hard and people don't want to hear. But we have to, I think, almost normalize having conversations around the impact of cigarettes, of marijuana, of alcohol, and not sugarcoat it, and speak from places of facts. You know, having people like Dr. Publicker share his expertise and experience. And then I think that's the first step in having people maybe question their own place on the continuum of acceptance of these kinds of consumptions.
The materials within the Time to Ask fact sheet, for example, refer to unhealthy alcohol use. Is that create by the very word use there, the notion of healthy alcohol use?
Thanks for that question. And Dr. Publicker, please interrupt me as the expert. But what we've learned through our research and looking at the evidence, and most recently the Surgeon General report on addiction, which is the first ever report of its kind on alcohol and addiction, what we've learned is that there are no healthy levels of alcohol consumption. So all of the documents that we're creating, we say that, and you just don't see that anywhere. So what we're hoping is that all of us can get informed, and health professionals as well, and look at, so what is the lowest level of risk if you're choosing to consume alcohol? Not that people shouldn't drink, but just get informed, the same way that we get informed about how much sugar we consume or how much we walk or don't walk. Mm. So we have materials on the website, www.lunderdineen.org. And if you click on Time to Ask, then you will see resources that we have. And one is an infographic, which tells you what is the lowest risk, what is heavy drinking, how is that defined by the experts, what is binge drinking, and how is that defined by the experts. Again, just getting people to think about how they might want to reconsider their consumption. And I just want to stress again, there's an important need to get informed before it's an addiction. This is a public health problem. So rather than wait till folks come into a practice and they meet the criteria for a substance use disorder, it's an opportunity for us to rethink that and make a change.
The issues of addiction, they really start with alcohol. It's just that simple. It seems to be just that simple. But the fact that alcohol usage has been so significantly normalized in society makes it a very difficult topic to even get into with a lot of people.
It's so true. When we did our needs assessment with the three practices that we're working closely with, what we found is that health professionals know it's a problem. They want to do something, but they're uncomfortable and they're not necessarily confident. And some of the fears that they have are really upsetting a patient by talking about it. And if you think about your own personal life, where do you go? Where do you go with where alcohol is missing? Right? It can be uncomfortable if someone chooses to have water over alcohol. All of our celebrations, whether it's sporting or outdoor activities, are all centered around alcohol. So it's ingrained and it's uncomfortable. But yet we all know, we've all been touched. There's no one that I talk to that says I don't have a story. And unfortunately, some of us have more than one story. So it's really, you know, as our as our pilot is named. It's time to ask. It's time to talk about it.
Dr. Publicker, moving forward, what do you view as the one really key thing that individuals can do to help further this conversation? Perhaps we need to see a greater effort to normalize discussion of alcohol in association with all of these other addictive substances, which dominate the headlines so frequently.
Well, I think that one of the things which we've already touched on is if the focus is solely on opiate, if there's a movement to normalize the use of marijuana, essentially we're focusing away from a problem that has really vaster prevalence and harm. I think that Alcohol Awareness Month gives us an opportunity to lead people to think about their use. One other point that I'd really like to emphasize is that there's actual treatment available that makes alcohol problems treatable. There actually are medications that are rarely known that can dramatically improve access to treatment and results. So I think that as part of the conversation, we need to understand that it is a brain disease. It's not a moral disorder, and that as a brain disorder, there actually exist medications that can significantly improve outcome, beginning with a conversation that allows people to speak with their physicians, with their nurse practitioners, be able to introduce the conversation, feel comfortable about it, and know that there's hope.
Dr. Publicker, you've enjoyed significant success in your own career in the field of addiction treatment, and we would be remiss if we failed to mention the fact that you have recently been awarded by the American Society of Addiction Medicine a Lifetime Achievement Award. And, sir, that's a significant accomplishment, and I'd like to take the opportunity to congratulate you for that, the result of that work being better lives for so many people directly associated with the treatment you provided.
Thank you very much. I have to say that my wife and my mother are very proud of me.
Hey, you couldn't have a greater cheering session. Section, I can't believe. We appreciate your time this morning, Doctor. Thank you for being available.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Denise, it was a pleasure to meet you. I'm sharing a link to that educational information we were talking about up on our Facebook page. It is the Pulse AM 620 on Facebook, and you'll find a link that will take you right to a conversation about alcohol and the Time to Ask educational program.
Thank you so much for doing that, and I just wanted to mention one more tool there. If you think you know all there is to know about alcohol, click on that link on our website, and there are two videos that are 30-second segments. Click on those to see if you really know what you think you know about alcohol. I think you'll find some interesting facts that will surprise you.
Excellent. We certainly appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for being here and for sharing this information. It's an important conversation to have. And Sean, thanks for bringing it to the fore, because we have had the opportunity to talk about other drugs and other concerns related to addiction. But you're absolutely spot on in that so often alcohol is just immediately bypassed as that conversation unfolds.
Thanks for having me.